The reading by Adelita Usnibei is part of Il Mondo Magico, the curatorial project Cecilia Lemani developed for the Italian Pavilion at the 57th Art Biennale in Venice. We met Adelita Usnibei the day the pavilion was inaugurated, and we talked about her work, a video installation built upon a Thurrott's reading in which a group of young people reflect on their own connection to the environment and to the exploitation of the land.
I think we think that we're in such a privileged position, but we're really not. I mean, once the earth is gone...
The Thurrott's, conceiving some of the main issues linked to the environmental crisis, has been designed by the artist herself. Usnibei's work often investigates complex questions about class, gender, civil rights, commons, and it draws inspiration from a set of anarchist and libertarian pedagogical theories and alternative teaching methods. She sets up situations and experimental formats of discussion and sharing, where the participants can come to terms with their relationship to the social and economical power dynamics of our era. That's where the Thurrott's step into her work, both as a pedagogical and magic tool to imagine and write all the possible scenarios and futures. Unlike many of the previous films that are more on the documentary side of her production, very much site-specific in terms of the set, the site where the workshops and events are happening, the reading is staged. The context is not a carrier of information.
So I think essentially what I tried to do here was respond to a theme, which was not incredibly simple for me. Magic is obviously something that can be taken in very different directions. But one thing that I was really trying to do in this video was to create a non-space, which is something I've never done before. I wanted to try and concentrate on the actions and the words and the kind of vocabulary that was being used in the conversation more strongly than I have in the past. And so I tried to create a space which is essentially a dark room where the people who are taking part in the reading and the tarot reader have this sort of freedom, quote unquote, to be concentrating, and sort of the whole video is sort of concentrating on them and the kind of bodies and their gestures and their language. In the past, I think I've given a lot of weight to the context, and here the context comes out through what is being said. So I think it becomes very, very clear that we are in Manhattan, that we're in the US, that the group I'm speaking to is there. But I think also thinking about the biennial as a context, I was trying to open up the space, maybe by making it so dark, to contextualizing it not immediately. So not to give the sort of key to read into the context that was very, very direct. So that's something that was purposely kind of thought about in terms of the biennial. In terms of direction, nothing is scripted as usual. And the teens that took part in the project had never seen the cards before. So every reaction you see when they're turning a card, when they're discussing what it is that they see in the card, because obviously tarots historically are a type of reading you do through images and through symbology. So I was really carefully thinking about how to channel all of the kind of viewing capacity in looking at the tarot cards and looking at the gestures and the kind of conversations. That was my main goal in this piece.
The known space is not a neutral space, though. What emerges from the dark is a very relative cultural and situated speech, so to speak, a rather American perspective ahead of a very universal concern, the exploitation of the hurt.
Yeah, absolutely. I think every single film or workshop I do, depending on obviously the crowd I'm speaking to and the people I'm engaging with, is going to bring that out. So bring culturally, it's going to, the kind of specificities of that culture are going to emerge. Had I done this in Europe, it would have been completely different. I think the videos that we shot in France speak to a kind of history of protesting in a really different way. So I think that, yes, it is a video that is certainly coming from that perspective. And I think the choice also of clothing, for example, so you see one of the teenagers in the film is wearing an American flag shirt. So I was really trying to think about nationality, because being, you know, in a national pavilion, so being offered to represent a country is obviously very complex for me and problematic. So I tried to think about a space where I was living at the time, which is the US, and I was trying to break free from, in some ways, the expectations of having to work with Italy or having to work with the Italian context. Not that the video doesn't have elements of quote-unquote universality. I mean, I hate that word, but I think that it does speak to the earth in terms that aren't strictly speaking culturally American in some ways, but that can also speak to a wider audience in some ways. So the point of view, the specificity of the point of view is American, but I also think that because it's a hegemony, like the cultural hegemony of America is still very strong, especially in the kind of conversations we were having, which are to do with like colonization and imperialism and value. All of those things are to do with cultural hegemony. So to me, doing this film in America was both a way to challenge what it means to be representing a nation other than the States in this case, with a video that speaks from that perspective, but at the same time to try and break it free from being purely and only about the States. So the States here are sort of like the specter of a cultural hegemony rather than specifically the United States. I think there's a part in the film where one of the teens says, she's speaking to another person who's participating and saying, you talked about us as Americans, but actually we're citizens of the earth, or we're people who inhabit the earth. And I think that that's a specific part in the film where you realize that, yes, of course we're in America. Of course these are teens that are brought up there. Of course they have their cultural specificity. But at the same time, the intent in some ways is to speak to something much wider, because we are all implicitly connected to these questions. So to how we understand value, how we valorize the earth, how we protect or not protect the earth, et cetera, et cetera. So I think even though there's a certain naivete and a certain innocence to, which is also specific to American speech, I think that that's a sort of key that I was trying to play into.
Beside the dark non-space the participants are framed within, the cinematic apparatus, the equipment, the crew, the artist herself are part of the video. The observer is also the subject, primary or not, of the reading.
Yeah, I'm trying to be more and more present in the work in some ways, because the pedagogical part is something that to me is primary in some ways. So being part of that circle, as I was part of the workshop, was definitely a choice that I had to make in terms of being present and being a voice amongst the people that I'd engaged in the project itself. So to me, being present was very, very important, and it was something that it was definitely like a conscious choice. It was in some ways a way to stress the fact that, of course, there is authorship, like there's editing. The film is not the full hour of, and more than an hour of the tarot reading session that was there originally. So it's my perspective on what we went through. But at the same time, I feel like it's very important for me to be physically part of the work. I could have been behind a camera. There was a lot of conversation about that, but I prefer to give directions to the film crew and be part of the film, because to me the primary thing was to be helping, not helping is not the right word, but be part of the conversation of the workshop. Otherwise I would have just been filming. So it's a different gaze. It's an entirely different gaze in some ways.
Okay. When you do value something, there's so much more that comes with that. You want to protect it, you want to savor it, you want to treasure it. It has meaning, it has use, and you care about it.
Yeah.
But if you don't value something, then...
The tarots are a way to answer precisely a certain theme, the magic. But what is it? Is it a human resource to cope with reality?
There's like magic in that. That's like very cool.
I think coping might not be the right word for me. I think more than coping, it's a way of understanding that there are different registers and different realities. And we usually, I think, we as a term I don't like to use, but there's a kind of hegemonic understanding in neoliberal cultures that everything can be used, everything can be parceled, everything can be split into smaller parts, everything can be packaged. And I feel like that's a very distinct way to think about what we inhabit. And I think that there are very different realities, so it's not necessarily a way of coping, but it's just a way of understanding our implication in a system that packages. So to me, like, the film is supposed to think through those steps, or how are we implicated, how are we complicit in a system that sort of packages land or extracts without necessarily thinking of the consequences. Yeah. Oh yeah, I wanted to say one last thing about the tarot cards. when I was invited to do this pavilion, I was thinking about how to move through magical territory in some ways. And what I found was going to be maybe be interesting was tarot as like a queering practice in some ways, because it can be seen as a sort of, it's marginalized, it's infantilized, it's the irrational in some ways. And we are taught in these societies to, like, you know, ridicule the irrational. And I think tarot is a really interesting practice, because what you do with a tarot reader is you sit in front of them and they offer you a moment of, like, narration between you and some, and a person you often don't know. You know, they dig into, like, the deepest recesses of your soul and the deepest recesses of your psyche, and they try to produce a narrative with you that will help you to move on from wherever you are. There's this card called the obstacle. And so I think it's really beautiful to think about it that way, to think about the fact that, to me, the pedagogical moment was effectively what always occurs in a tarot reading session, which is like the production of a narrative and of surpassing the obstacle and, like, getting to the final outcome. And all of these steps that we go through in the reading are essentially the pedagogical framework through tarot reading, which is, yeah, it's something that is often sort of set aside.
Every tarot card was designed by Adelita at the outbreak of the civil protests at Standing Rock in North Dakota. It was the beginning of 2017.
We become the colonized, then the non-living becomes colonized.
So I was reading a lot about Standing Rock at the time. A lot of the people we introduced into the workshops, we had speakers come to the workshop, which we structured at the Highlands. We had 3 days intensive. One of them was Julian Noisecat, who is a professor at Columbia, but also a member of an indigenous tribe in the U.S. And him and Hannah Black, who is a writer and also thinking through worth, essentially through value. She came to talk to the participants about that. We had Elizabeth Pavanelli, who is also a native Australian, who came to talk about different questions in relationship to capitalism, different visions of the earth. And then we had Ewan Calder-Williams, who thinks a lot about the ways in which we understand the end of the world or catastrophe, and the fact that it's actually ongoing and it's just going to be badly distributed. Like, the end of the world isn't just going to happen in one big bang, but it's just going to be badly distributed across the globe. So we're just going to have, essentially, according to Iman, a sort of slow apocalypse that happens in spaces that are less privileged. And then the last places to go, quote unquote, are going to be the more privileged spaces. So in relationship to that, what I tried to do in the workshop and in the research coming up to this project and to the designing of the cards was to think through different concepts. So all these concepts were partially picked in some ways through what I was reading, partially Elizabeth Pavanelli, Hannah Black, and Evan Calder-Williams, and Julian's work, Federico Campagna's work, and Silvia Federici was also a really important reference in this project. And the ways in which I sort of try to break down a kind of taxonomy around extraction, what extraction meant. And so in this sense, I broke it down to a few different themes, let's say. So one of them was vulnerability, for example, thinking through the fact that no matter what sort of relationship we have to the land, we are essentially very vulnerable to the ways in which it's becoming potentially toxic, et cetera, et cetera, and that there's a class dimension to that toxicity. And then I was thinking through the ongoing end, which is something that Ewan talks about. That's one of the cards. So again, the end isn't like this one phenomenon, but it's something that keeps kind of occurring in some ways. You know, the human race is a very small sliver of time in comparison to the amount of time the Earth has been around. I mean, I'm saying a banality, but that's kind of like part of what that card tried to speak to. Then we had a card called Soil and a card called Dirt. And to me, it was interesting to think through how those two different words are relating to the same material, but effectively, or a very similar material, but are effectively, through language, given a different kind of value. And then another card specifically was value. So how do we give value to certain things? Like, what does it mean to give value to the soil? Or what does it mean to think of the soil as dirt? So all of these themes were sort of built up and thought about in relationship to each other, to what was happening at Standing Rock, and through extractivism, essentially.
It's always ending.
Adelita's projects are often grounded in collective creative processes.
Getting toxic.
People participating in her workshops, role plays, meetings, are invited to be part of a conversation, to collaborate in order to face an obstacle and overtake it. She sets up spaces for imagination and agency. She gives people the chance and the voice to speak out loud their needs and concerns.
Yeah, I think that's one of the aspects that kind of always catches me a little bit by surprise, but that I love the most is actually after the workshop when we always do a screening for the people who took part. And there's always a sort of excitement, and there's always like a sort of something that lingers all the time. And I think that's something that, you know, for viewers who get into the work, it's something that also lingers with them. So I always think of my work as a kind of two-step pedagogical practice in some ways, where the framework of the workshop is the first pedagogical step, and everyone who's involved has one experience of that. And then the second pedagogical step in some ways is the film. And so if there's somebody who sits through the film, watches it, and finds it empowering, that to me is like a success in some ways. Because I do feel like, even though it's not something that I, you know, I love it when it happens, but it's not something that I set out to do, because I think empowerment is not something, it's not really a top-down thing you can offer to people. It's either an experience that occurs, and I'm very happy when it does, but I don't set about, you know, empowering people. I think I don't have that strength in me.
But at the end of every story, every chapter, every community, Adelita Usnibey moves to another one, again and again. But the question is, where is the boundary between engagement and distance? After building networks, one after the other, what remains?
But to answer your last question on closeness and distance in my practice, I spent the last 5 years traveling, and I got very, very tired and very, very sick. And one last project I did in San Francisco was to do with competition. And I worked with young athletes who'd pushed their bodies to the point where they'd broken their bodies. So they'd literally, like, you know, ripped a muscle or broken a leg, or some had more permanent damage. And I think in that moment, when I produced this project called After the Finish Line with these athletes, and we shot part of the workshop in a disused mall in Cupertino, it was really also about my, like, failure to compete, and my unwillingness to compete, and my breaking down. And so to me, well, what I'm trying to do now is to work more close to a place where I have a network of community of friends where that can sustain me, because at the end of the day, what I was doing was going somewhere else to produce a network, and I failed to think about the network I need. And I think that's something that's very common. You know, it sounds like a very privileged position in a lot of ways to, like, be 3 months in Paris, 4 months and whatever else. But at the end of the day, what it does is it rips you apart. It rips you from your roots unsustainably, really. And so, yeah, to me, there is a question around our practice and the ways in which we are deemed to be eternally mobile and eternally sort of, you know, pushed to move constantly, which is unsustainable, unrealistic, and really damaging. I definitely want to take some time to, like, think through what I need in order to produce work that makes sense to me and to the others I work with, to the best of my capacity, really.
RadioPapesse.org